Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Well, good evening, everyone, to a special edition of the Best Ever You Show. I know we don't usually do shows on Sunday night, but I had to do this one because I am just such a big fan of this gal joining us. We've got an amazing guest with us. Her name is Sarah Basey. I got it right, Sarah. Hi,
yes,
Sarah.
You did.
I did.
Hi.
And hi. And she is the beautiful, beautiful Mrs. Minnesota International 2012. She is going to be competing for the title of Mrs. International. Sarah, is that still in July in Chicago?
It is. The prelims are on July 20th, and July 21st is the finals.
Nice. And that's right there in Chicago. I had the privilege of representing Maine last year at that event, and it is just a phenomenal event. And best wishes with everything for Mrs. International. But right now we're going to talk about your life and so forth, because aside from being a beauty queen, you have quite a story and quite a journey since around 1994 that I know there are a lot of people tuned in to hear your story. And so for those following along, you can visit Sarah's website at sarahbasey.com. That's S-A-R-A-H-B-A. I'm going to spell it wrong, Sarah.
You got it.
B-A-Z-E-Y, right?
You got it.
Did I get that right? Okay.
Yes,
you did. That was really funny. Because to pronounce your name properly on the radio, I have it B-A-Y-Z-E-E, Bayzy, in front of me. I'm like, oh, no, spell it like that. That's cute. That's funny. And then you can read more about her and her journey to Mrs. International at MrsInternational.com. So welcome to the show tonight. It's a pleasure for me to have you here with us. It's an honor.
Well, thank you, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
So let's talk. Let's talk about being your best here, because you got thrown a doozy of a curveball. Let's just start out and tell everybody what happened to you.
Sure. I am a burn survivor, and what happened to me back on October 26, 1994. And I always find it kind of fascinating how there are certain dates that just become seared in our memory. I own a construction products company, and I sell steel and concrete and other construction materials to build our nation's infrastructure. I work around the country, but on that particular day, I was working on a project right here in the Twin Cities, and I had chartered a helicopter to fly over the construction site. And the helicopter was actually giving rides to the workers, giving them a view, vantage point, and perspective of their work that they maybe wouldn't normally see. It was the end of a season. Of course, the end of October here in Minnesota, snow starts flying, so that's the end of our construction season, as you well know, Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. I've spent some really cold Halloweens there.
Right. And so I hopped in the last flight, and we took off from the batch plant site where the concrete was mixed, and we were flying over a new bridge. And as we came over the bridge, they had also just strung some power lines. And unfortunately, those lines being new had not been marked. And our pilot made a decision when he saw the lines that he either had to go over or under. And he tried to duck under the lines, and unfortunately, they became tangled with our rotor, and it actually snapped the cables, and we lost our rotor, which went sailing into live traffic, and we traveled about a quarter of a mile before we crashed on the new pavement. And when we landed on the pavement, we were still seated upright, which is a good thing, because I think had any other position, obviously I wouldn't probably be here speaking to you. And we came down, we skidded, we had a ton of momentum, we smashed into the concrete temporary barrier separating us from live traffic, and there were five of us in the helicopter. The other four gentlemen all were able to get out promptly, and I unfortunately was still belted in the back seat, and the helicopter exploded while I was still inside and blew me out. And, of course, I caught on fire, was soaked in jet fuel, and so I burned very quickly, was able to get my seatbelt off, was able to stay down. I stopped, dropped, and rolled. I thought those words. Thank goodness we teach that to children. And I rolled and rolled to try and get the flames out. Ultimately, the pilot jumped on my back, extinguishing the flames, and the end result was 40% third degree. Burns, and then of course about 40% of my body gave up skin as donor sites to repair the area, and I spent just about 2 months in the burn center at what is now Regents Hospital. At the time it was called Ramsey Hospital. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what happened.
So two months recovering, but really all the way to now. How long has it taken you to really comfortably start talking about all of this?
Oh, boy, is that a good question. Well, backing up, it really takes for many of us as burn survivors about 18 months for our skin to do what it's going to do, go through that process of healing and the cells to finally stop, multiplying and trying to heal. So it was 18 months of intensive therapies. I wore a plastic face mask because my face was burned. I'm grafted on my jaw and my neck. They took my scalp off to replace the skin in those areas, which was not too much fun.
I can't even imagine. Well, it's really interesting because, this is going to sound really superficial and really material, but as women, just one of the things that we're attached to, and I know you have blonde hair like I do, we're attached to our long blonde hair. And we've talked to Alana Stewart before, who was with, for example, Farrah Fawcett, when Farrah Fawcett had to cut off her hair and lost her hair through chemo and things like that. So that's just right there, that's just one slight piece of something that's,
well,
you know what I mean?
It's interesting. It's interesting you bring that up because let me tell you what happened to my hair. I had just, backing up further, almost 30 years ago, I was Miss Teen of Minnesota. So pageantry has kind of been a part of my life. And in 1992, 93, I was Miss Metropolitan and competed in the Miss America system at Miss Minnesota. So I was just about a year having competed at a very nice pageant. And so I had long blonde hair, had a ponytail in that day, had a ponytail holder in, which was soaked in fuel, and it burned. But the crazy thing was I still had a semblance of a ponytail that stayed in the core. And while I was laying there, an engineer from the Department of Transportation was holding on to me, and I was squeezing his hand with all my might. And I noticed that my ponytail was mostly detached, and it was kind of laying on my shoulder. And I reached over, pulled it off, gave it to him. I handed him my ponytail, and I said, "You can get rid of this. I guess I don't have a need for it anymore." And he tossed it in the weeds.
It's amazing what you've gone through. I mean, you're really technically probably a trauma survivor.
I don't know that you can endure a severe burn and not be a trauma survivor. I mean, I can't think of a way that you can become burned and not have experienced something really bad.
Yeah. So how do you stay so positive? What was the moment with this? Or do you remember a day that goes with this where you said, I'm living through this? I mean, was there ever a point where your life was in question at all, or were you, or anything like that? Were there moments in the hospital where you might not have lived?
Well, yes to three or four different questions.
All
there.
Of them, yeah. Yeah.
I knew on day 11, and believe it or not, even though they gave me amnesic drugs, and they often put burn patients into a coma, induced coma, I recall everything. I was lucid far more than I probably should have been. But on day 11, they gave me a mirror because I was demanding it. I wanted to see, and I was beyond recognition. In fact, when my mom came into the, she had been in Arizona at the time, and by the time they got her home and she was walked into my room, she turned around and went back and said, "That's not my daughter." And so my face was ballooned and swollen, eyelashes, eyebrows, all of that burned off. My lips severely burned. My hair is gone. So I, you know, really did not look recognizable. But they finally gave me that mirror. My eyes were swollen so much that I just had slits. But I looked in the mirror and I could see, I have green eyes. I could see my eyes, and I remember saying, "I'm going to be okay." And, you know, those windows being the eyes to the soul, that was that moment that you just know that saying is more literal than anything. And I knew I was going to be okay at that moment, and I told my family that, and I told my doctor that. And so that's
yeah,
the answer
really
to that.
Really interesting. It's so interesting you say that because, you know, because I was on the Mrs. International website and I was scrolling through everybody looking at who was competing and stuff. And it's so interesting that you mention your eyes because that's probably the one reason why you're here tonight is because I said, she's got just, isn't that really funny that you mentioned that? What a coincidence, strange thing. Okay, I'm playing that Twilight Zone music right now because she's got really pretty eyes and they sparkle. She must be a really nice person. And
I
really
so
honestly
kind.
Didn't even know your story. You know, I looked again. You know, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to go look at her story. And then I read it and everything. And I'm like, oh, she'd be a really, really wonderful example of just, you know, being your best for everybody listening to Best Ever You. And that's so true. No matter what happens to you,
yes.
I love what you just said. Your eyes are the window to your soul. And that you really, so that was a decision you made right there. Do you remember what you said to yourself? Because there's a lot of people who go through a lot of crud.
And
it might
still
not be
me.
Burning or you know, like my dad's had been in the hospital for off and on since 2004 for strokes and things like that. And he always says that too. It's like your eyes say it all.
Yeah. I'm going to be okay. I can see me. I just knew I was still there. The rest of me wasn't even me. I mean, there was some monster. The rest of me was like some horrifying mask that you would see at a horrible Halloween party. And yet when I saw my eyes and I could really see my eyes, I was okay.
Yeah. Now, were you married at the time? Oh, go ahead and answer my question.
No.
Okay.
I was 28 years old and I was engaged, but I was not married.
Is the guy that you were engaged to who you're married to now? I'm crying.
No, actually, no, he's no longer alive. He passed away from a heart attack, and I'm married to a wonderful man today named Joseph.
Hi, Joseph.
Yeah.
You are a wonderful man. That's really nice. So what was the moment, going back to that moment again, so you said, I'm going to be okay, and my eyes are the window to my soul, things
I
like that.
Me, yep.
Now what did, yeah, I see me. Now what did you do, though? What were your next steps?
Well, I did not see myself in a mirror again until shortly before they released me from the hospital. And you also had asked in that question my life was ever, I think, at risk, and it was. In fact, I almost died because of fluid on the lungs, because I was immobilized for so long, and I was just unable to breathe. And I finally got an intern in to listen to my chest, to listen to my breathing and how shallow it was, and I was literally suffocating to death. And the bells and whistles and alarms went off just like they do on TV when you see code blues or whatever they call them in the hospital. And they came flying with a cart, and they literally slit my side open and punched a tube in through to drain my lungs like that, you know. No additional painkillers, no putting me under, no anything. They just put the tube in and drained my lungs to get the fluid off before they lost me. And that was a pretty scary moment. That was a very scary moment. And
And about how far into the stay was that? Was that I it's interesting with any kind of even illness and stuff. Some of the things that have happened to you are very common with stroke patients and, you know, anybody experiencing a medical crisis, you know, with fluid on the lungs and things like that.
Right.
And so some of the things you're talking about I'm familiar with my dad mm-hmm. having been in the hospital. But I, you said they intubated you. In something I read, they intubated you
When I was awake, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
They did. It was no fun. That was it was a horrific feeling. It was, you know, the doctor, it was a male, and he was young, and that's about all I can tell you because he didn't go on to be my burn doctor. But the gentleman in the ER who was holding the intubation, the tube over my head, and I was not one to watch TV and doctor shows, so I really didn't know what was going on. It was my first time in a hospital ever, and coming in through an ER is not the way you want to do it. And I'm telling him, no, I don't need whatever that is. You know, I'm trying to convince him. And he just basically said, do you want to live?
You do.
Open your mouth. And I did. And he goes ahead and puts this, maneuvers it down my throat. And they have an IV in me, so obviously they're trying to knock me out. But I was fully lucid, fully conscious as that tube went in. Oh, it was a horrific feeling.
There's nothing quite like, you probably remember that.
I thought I was drowning. It was just a horrible feeling. Yeah.
My dad says that's worse than having a stroke. He says it sort of facetiously, but we're grateful that he's alive to even joke with us at all. But that feeling of that thing going down your throat without any kind of sedation or anything is really horrible.
So he was awake when they intubated him once.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like a gagging, really bizarre,
yes.
awful, horrible
yes.
feeling. And it's real difficult to watch, too. So, what a harrowing experience. Now, you're getting released. Let's jump a little bit here. We've gone through being intubated while you are awake. We've gone through nearly losing you with fluid on the lungs, not to mention just mm-hmm. the fact that you're burned on 40% of your body. And then I imagine there's quite a few surgeries that you endure mm-hmm. over several years' time. Is that how that goes?
Yeah. Excuse me. I have had 15 surgeries, and the last few were actually after I was an outpatient, and surgeries that I've had to release a contracture. I had a Z-plasty on my neck, things like that. But while I was in the hospital, they do a cadaver to enclose you, if you will, to cover you so that you're as protected as possible. So I had surgeries placing cadaver over the burned areas. And then from that, they started the donor process. And none of that is pleasant. In fact, I tell many people that I think the things that are done to you in the burn center are far more painful than being burned. And most people can't relate to that at all, because burning is bad enough. But, oh, my goodness gracious, a donor site, in my opinion, is far more painful than the burn itself.
Hmm. And what does that mean? What do you mean
donor
by that? Because, just for people listening, so people understand.
I'm happy to explain it, but I certainly want to make certain that if anybody is queasy or if this is difficult, I don't want to make anybody, ill or uncomfortable, so certainly be forewarned that it
tune out before
for some folks, right?
And the reason I think let's explain too why we're talking about some of these things, because you really are, you're a burn survivor, and yes, some of this is graphic, but the intention of Best Ever You is for people to pass this show along to other people who have survived, and that's really your goal and mission too, is because you're out in the community talking. Mm-hmm. to burn survivors, helping them get through the physical, the emotional, the mental, the trauma, the everything, because you're a trained SOAR volunteer, you're an international speaker, and you're an officer of the Phoenix Society.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, and I will say when I do get into the more educational part of it, which we're talking about right now, especially with the high school, junior high, and younger, the more graphic I get and the more education they get, the more excited they are and the more questions they have. It's actually more the adults that have to leave the room or raise their hand and say, you know, I've had enough. So I think that's kind of interesting and a little bit funny. But a donor site is your healthy skin that has not been affected by a burn, where the doctors will take a dermatome, which the best way to explain is like a cheese slicer, if you can imagine. That's they actually remove the top layer of skin, and they take that area off, and they will put it over the area where your skin will not grow back because it's burned deep enough that there isn't the ability for it to grow back, and they replace that area with a graft. So the donor site gives up the skin, and then it's placed in the burned area as a graft. It's usually, at least in my case, it was stapled on, and they would staple, like, a, believe it or not, a wedding veil type material with medication to the donor site to let it heal and scab over, and they can actually even take from a donor site a second time. In my case, they took the skin basically from my ankles to my hips and my scalp as donor site to replace my left arm and my back and my neck and parts of my face and a little bit on my right arm. So
do you just basically... That sounds to me like you're just at this point then hurting all over from head to toe.
You got it. It's unbelievably painful. You can't move. When they remove, you know, the donor site area, especially on my legs, they'd tent the sheet over it. I mean, I couldn't have a sheet touch it, and they'd actually put heat on it to try and warm it to get it to heal. Oh. And the crazy thing about when you're a burn patient is you have these unbelievable swings of freezing and being overheated, and, I mean, your body is, we are such amazing machines. And my resting heart rate could be 165, 175, resting heart rate. And thank goodness I was in good condition and, again, relatively young because my heart, you know, endured all of that. But that's a lot of work on your heart. And that's not when I was in pain and it would go racing, you know.
Yeah. Do you ever stop and wish this hadn't happened to you?
No, I really don't. And I know a lot of burn survivors who feel that way, and some who are even grateful, which I don't know that I'm grateful. But I just believe things happen the way they're supposed to. I believe in God. I just believe my life has happened the way it was supposed to, and I'm thankful for every day. I always have been. And I gave myself, you know, people ask me if I ever got depressed or have nightmares or daymares, and I never have. With the exception of after I was released from the hospital and I was in the intensive therapy and traction where they were hanging me from the ceiling to try and get range of motion in my arm, and I was taking, you know, several narcotics just to try and suffer through it. And I remember I gave myself a half an hour of just all-out wailing, crying, feeling anger and guilt and frustration and why me and all
of it. You set the timer, though, didn't you?
Well, I kind of did. And the half an hour was up, and I sucked it up, and I said, okay, this is what I got, and this is where I'm going. And I was actually in Phoenix at my parents' home trying to escape bitter cold because I was so sensitive to the cold. And my I came back home to my therapist here, and they said, now you could be experiencing some severe depression. And they had been monitoring me, and they hadn't seen me slip or fall into a depression or whatever. And I said, I gave myself a half an hour while I was in Phoenix. I'm fine.
We're going to live.
And that was it. That was really it.
It's amazing how a lot of people that have that attitude do that. They sort of set a timer, and then the willpower just kicks in even greater.
Yeah.
Do you think your training in, you have a BA in psychology and you're a graduate of Harvard Business School, do you think any of that training, was that before or after this, and how has that helped?
Well, the BA in psychology was from Augsburg College here in Minneapolis, and that was right after high school, so that was definitely before, and it most definitely helped. I'm also a professional figure skater, and the reason I studied psych is because I had every intention of becoming a sports psychologist, so kind of the mind over matter motivation anyway. And in fact, while I was in the hospital, they do have social workers and psychologists, psychiatrists visiting you, getting to know you, making sure that you're, you know, kind of the full picture is being addressed And the therapist came in to see me, and I was telling them how I do imagery rehearsal, and you know, I had my breathing figured out, and because of all that skating training, that most definitely helped me. And then Harvard was actually after the accident, so
yeah. What's that like going through Harvard Business School?
Oh, it's the most amazing thing. It might be the most amazing thing I've ever done, aside from marrying Joe.
It was
unbelievable. It's a 3-year program, and I lived on campus for essentially a month, 3 years in a row, and did a really intensive program. And you just immerse yourself in business skills, training, and learning. And my first, I laugh when I tell people after I got accepted, I was so excited, I was beside myself. And I got there, and I spent the first 2 days between classes basically getting sick in the restroom because it was the most aggressive, impressive. It was so many things. The emotions were unbelievable, and it was so competitive.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Loved every minute of it. So.
Yeah. And, okay, so we mentioned Joe twice now. Okay, who's Joe? Hi, Joe, the husband. But when did you get married? And tell us a little bit about him, because he's a critical part of all of this, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, he's a wonderful man. He's salt of the earth, so he keeps me grounded. And he's from Minnesota as well. And I met him, I think, almost 18 years ago. I actually met him not too long before the accident. And but I wasn't engaged to him. I was engaged to someone else. And we just had a very wonderful relationship right from the start. I just found him fascinating. And so he's just a great guy. And, yeah, he worked in construction. He still does construction in a different way. He develops man caves for a living, which is very fun. Garage condos men buy and
really
turn into their hangouts.
So cute.
Yeah, it's very cute, very fun. He probably wouldn't like it if I call it cute, but they're very manly.
Yes. Very yeah. manly. Those are not cute. Those are.
Exactly. They're very manly.
Funny. Yeah, I have to stop saying that word because my boys are, I have four boys, and they keep saying, stop saying cute. We're not cute in our baseball
uniforms. I know. What is it with that word?
Are.
It just fits so many things.
That's funny. So what does he think of all of this, this pageant? Pageants are part of you, so I'm sure he knows this from before and so forth. But what does he think about all of the things that you have going on right now with Mrs. Minnesota at International and competing at Mrs. International?
Well, you know, it's probably the best way to describe that is to back up a little bit and talk about the fact that, I only gave myself a half an hour to be depressed, but it has taken me many, many years to be able to wear a short sleeve shirt, because my arm's all grafted, my back is a mesh graft, which is not a pretty sight, in my opinion. Although there are people who look at my scars and say, oh, they're beautiful, which is quite sweet of them to say.
Worst critics, my love.
Yeah, we are.
I had wondered, too, because, you know, from the pictures of the accident to now, I read 40% of her body was burned, and, you know, just logically, I'm like, well, I'm not seeing anything. And I saw your arm, and I'm like, oh, she looks phenomenal. That's what I said.
You're so nice.
So I think that's wonderful. You know, it reminds me of, I wear, for example, I wear a Medic Alert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have food allergies. You know, when something
I read that.
You know, when something happens to you, it's remarkable to turn around and say, yes, I am a burn survivor, or yes, I've been resuscitated from food allergies. What would you like to know? And it actually, if, you know, sometimes people might see your arm, and actually you might save somebody's life and you never know it.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, it's interesting because my pageantry and what I've done here recently has been amazingly well received by the burn community. So, because I am so involved with the Phoenix Society and working with burn survivors and their families, I didn't know how they'd perceive it. And they have just been my greatest cheerleaders. They've been amazing. And so I'm very proud of that, very pleased by that. And, yeah, so I'm very proud of being a burn survivor. And but Joe, you know, I woke him up. I love telling people this. I woke him up on a January morning a couple of years ago in a swimsuit and high heels. And he's looking at me like, okay, you know, what is this? It's January in Minnesota. And I said, I am thinking about competing in a pageant. And I had had some friends who are very involved who said, Sarah, you know, kind of time to get on the horse. Let's try this. And so I went from not even wanting to wear a short sleeve shirt to putting on the outfits and getting on stage and not purchasing things based on whether it hid my scars or not. So I wear a strapless gown. I wear a backless dress. And my scars are obviously prominent and visible. And I just decided if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this all out. And I'm not going to make my decisions based on how to hide a scar. And Joe said to me that morning, he said, if they're going to judge you on your scars, then don't do it. But if they're going to see you the way I see you, you go for it. I just said, you're so smart. You are so smart.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and
well,
what great,
wonderful.
Yeah, and you know, not that what I really love about you is that a crown and a banner isn't going to give you any more or less self confidence.
Oh goodness, no, no. I enjoy doing it. I love the challenge. I love representing something I believe in. And the international pageant, which you said earlier, you're very proud of and
yeah.
You know, respect, obviously. It's just, I think, the most wonderful system. It's 50% platform. So it's 50%. The way I explain it to people when I meet them on the street is it's really you're judged mostly on what you do to make the world a better place.
Yep.
And that's promoting anything that you have passion about. And for me to be able to promote, you know, anything about the Phoenix Society and burn survival and advocacy and all of that is just such an honor.
Yeah. I remember going there last year, and I'm really not a classic pageant person. You know, I might be all like 5'3", if Mrs. Texas Angelique did my hair really big, you know. If my hair was really big, I might hit 5'3". You know, and I've had four kids, and I went there really not in shape, toned, skinny, or anything, you know. And, you know, all the women there, I've never had such a group of women treat me so sweet and respectfully. And there was no catty, there was no anything that, like you would think with pageants, whereas other things I've done, there were. So I was kind of scared going in, but, you know, I had Deanna Lins give me socks because I didn't have the right socks. I had Mrs. Texas doing my hair. I had, you know, I had friends give dresses to me. Just amazing gifts to just help me be my best there. It was really, really cool, and it was like a safe haven. For exactly what you're talking about, just a safe haven where everybody's got something there that they want to share to help make the world a better place. And they do, and they have the coolest meetings, you know, the orientation and some of the lunches and outings and things like that. It's just extraordinarily classy. You will love it. It's a class act all the way. It is just so much fun. And you'll have fun dancing too. That was what, you know, out of everything there, that was what I had the biggest blast doing was getting ready for the show, because they bring in this professional crew and you get to dance on stage, and it's so beautifully done. This is really a lot of fun. You're gonna have a riot.
Well, I just have a few weeks to go, so I can't wait.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you do, don't you? You just it's coming up.
I know. I'm on the countdown.
So what's your preparation? You want to talk a little bit about pageants? You want to talk a little bit about what your preparation has been? I'm sure there's pageant. What have you been doing to prepare for you know, are you going there to win? Are you going there to place? Are you going there to, what are you going for?
Well, Well, I'm kind of a competitive person, but you know, from being a little girl in figure skating through what I do every day, which is compete for construction projects and the supply of material, which is obviously very aggressive. Yeah. But I think I'm a healthy competitor because I really compete to do. You can only control you. And you know, I remind my staff of that on a regular basis. You know, we can't control what the other competitors do. We can only control us. And there's never a reason not to be nice and helpful and all of those things to the best of our ability. And because, you know, life goes by way too fast.
You're not
going to
kill people in your path?
No,
you're not
killing, nope.
They're not going to be people laying on the ground in your quest for the crown.
Nope, none of that. But I am, you know, really, my platform is kind of an easy one because I've been living it for 18 years. So from the standpoint of building credibility on the platform, again, that's just, I've been volunteering, you know, all of this time. And the Phoenix Society is something that I've been involved in for quite a few years as well. And the speaking is just fun. So right after I won the Mrs. Minnesota title, I left for Buenos Aires, Argentina for a Harvard class reunion. But while I was there, this is just a giggle, I had gotten two addresses of doctors in Buenos Aires that were burn docs from my burn doctor. And my husband and I showed the two names and addresses to the concierge at our hotel. And, you know, Buenos Aires is a very large city. It's, what, 13, 14 million people. And the concierge chose the one that was closest for us to that we could walk to. And so we walked, and we went past a couple of hospitals. And sure enough, we get to kind of the edge of a kind of a hospital area. And there's a condo building, and we buzz the buzzer, and the doctor lives. His name is Dr. Benham. And he lives in the penthouse, and he is 92, he's now 93 years old. He was 92 at the time. And the maid answered and spoke no English, and I'm not good at Spanish. And so she didn't understand a word I was saying, and I'm unannounced completely. This man doesn't even know I exist. And the doorman finally comes, and I can hear him say, dos Americanas. So he said there were two Americans here, apparently. And the door buzzed, and in we went, and up the elevator, which opened up into his foyer. And here is this 92-year-old Dr. Benham walking down the hall with a walker because he just had knee surgery, invites me right into his living room, and it turns out he has devoted 65 years of his life to burn survival in all of South America. And virtually any significant burn from halfway through Brazil down, so that entire lower, say, two-thirds of South America has been brought to him. This man is like being in the presence of God. I mean, he's amazing. He's a saint. And we had the most incredible visit, and he said, you must come back. So the next day, he invited us back and brought two burn survivors who he had treated in the 70s and 80s to join him. And we had just an amazing visit talking about the burn community and what it's like in America versus what it's like down there and other parts of the world. And he's invented things, and his burn care is, you know, just... It's,
you know,
so far
what
reaching.
A genius, you know what he did, you, being a psychologist, you know, having a BA in psychology, you know this.
Yes.
He totally
yes.
brought in people to mentor you also, because they've
yes.
carved the path. How genius is that?
Isn't that cool?
Yeah,
yes.
Totally cool. And I bet you showed up on his doorstep with no sleeves, too.
I had on short sleeves, so my whole left arm was showing, for sure. Yeah.
Communicate.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then since then, of course, back to the prep, I'm from Seattle to New York, and I've been meeting with burn docs and burn hospitals. And so working the platform and just doing what I normally do aside from pageantry is not a problem.
Yeah.
And but it does take a whole lot of other work and dedication. I mean, I eat. I'm very health conscious.
I was going to ask you about your body. With having gone through some of those things, do you, pardon my ignorance because I have no idea the answer to this question and I'm going to ask anyway, so if I ask it wrong or whatever, but can you move, being burned that badly on your arm, can you move your arm okay?
Oh, that's a very good question. I actually had to have a release done. One of the surgeries I had done, you know, many months after I was burned, was a release because I could not raise my arm past 90 degrees. You know, what happens is your body's creating cells to try and heal itself, but it overcorrects. And that's how you end up really with a contracture or a banding, some people would call it. So you lose range of motion. So I had to actually have a surgery to cut into my arm to place a piece of skin from my hip so that I could get full range of motion back. And that banding is still, I mean, it's still a concern for me because I can tear my arm if I overextend or put too much weight on it, like if I hang from a like a bar you would do a pull-up on.
Sure.
So yeah, there are definitely issues, and the skin is far more tender than it would be had I not been burned. It's thinner. It's I can get cuts and bruises without feeling, you know, because the nerves are gone in 40% of my body. Even though they've replaced it with surface skin, that skin did not contain nerves or hair follicles or pores. So I don't sweat where I'm grafted. I can't feel on the surface. I can only feel pressure if it's deep enough for me to feel in the muscle beneath. So it's very odd. Being burned, it's the strangest sensation. I when people ask me what's the, you know, most difficult part, I said it's when I lower myself into a bathtub and my entire back feels bone dry. And yet intellectually I know I'm in water. And it's a very frustrating, it's like your brain can't connect the dots. And that frustrates me. It probably shouldn't, but it does. So
You know, from being resuscitated, I don't really have much, tiny fraction, but I don't have much feeling in my fifth finger on my left hand. And it always, I never know what it's doing either. It's like the nerves are dead and that. Yeah.
I've never
heard of that. So I kind of know that feeling, like I don't feel hot or cold on the left side of my hand or whatever. And I have no idea quite why. But tiny fraction of what you're saying, but I get what you mean. Does that affect how you do exercise? Like what's your favorite kind of exercise? Because I imagine, you're an athlete, and, talking about being a sports psychologist and things like that, and, all the things, I can tell there's this athlete part of you, downhill skiing, mountain hiking, yoga, figure skating, and all the things that you love to do. Do you still do the things you love to do but are just a little bit more careful about them, or are there some things that you just can't do, or how do you stay in such good shape?
Yeah, well, actually what I love to do is kind of counterproductive to the figure skating. I've spent the last several years doing, believe it or not, treadmill 4 miles a day, and I do that because I had talked to a trainer, hired a trainer, I should say, and Mike Monty out of North Carolina, and my goal was to thin the thighs that I spent years developing for skating.
Is that what you do? Because I'm an old gymnast, and my thighs are 25 inches around. 25 inches around.
I get it. Totally. Hey, Elizabeth, I get it. And I have spent the last 2.5 years at least, and it has worked beautifully. So I do a treadmill for an hour, and then I do a combination of calisthenics and weightlifting every other day. And the calisthenics is 240 sit-ups, 240 leg lifts, and some crunch, some squeezies. and then I lift more for my upper body, so biceps and triceps and shoulders and that kind of thing. So, yeah, and I love it. I feel great. And there really isn't anything that I don't do except that I have to be more careful. If I fall, I can cut or bruise easier. So I just have to be very aware of that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. 4 miles on a treadmill a day, huh? That's why I
put your favorite news program on or your favorite whatever recorded, and it flies by.
It's interesting what I've been doing. I noticed about 150 days ago now that I was really consuming sugar in quantity, so I'm kind of sugar free for quite some time now. And in the past, like, 60 days of my life or so, I've discovered Zumba for some reason, and I love it. I do an hour Zumba every day. But
you just reminded me
of something about myself, because you mentioned thighs. And I spent so much of my youth building up my thighs. I mean, I really have big, there's just no way around it. I mean, they're built up muscular, 25 inches around.
Yep.
And that really does take that off.
It did for me. I'm telling you, it did.
It's the first time I've ever heard anybody who openly said they also built their youth.
You know, his message to me was, do not run, walk.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Because it seemed counterintuitive to me. I'm like, well, wouldn't you burn more calories in that same period of time? He's like, but anything you do that's, you know, jarring, that's putting weight and pressure on the quadricep, is building the quadricep. So, and I was a squat queen. I thought that doing lunges and squats were going to tone me and thin me, but they just kept thickening me. And so I don't do lunges and squats because I don't want to build any muscle.
If I lift weights,
I just want to tone.
If I lift weights, I am a disaster zone. If you put 20-pound weights in me and make me go lunging, like, down the hallway, they build up to, like, 28 inches around. It's just awful.
So I'm telling you, don't do that.
Don't do that.
This is just my experience. So I can't promote that I'm the end-all, be-all of race. But it worked for me, and it makes sense to me.
Yeah. So, okay. What I love about this conversation, too, is, you know, not only have all these things happened to you, you have such depth and substance and so forth, but one of the things I'm observing about you is you have a tremendous sense of humor. I can hear it and feel it and know it, and it's responsible for that twinkle in your eye, too. Have you always been that way? I know I asked double questions. Have you always been that way? And how did you keep your laughter through all of this?
Oh, you know, I can answer that pretty easily because I've thought a lot about it through my lifetime. I'm the baby of six, and I am the product of a mother and father who are amazing. But my father in particular, who unfortunately passed away just after I was released from the hospital. I know, it was horrible. He was one of those gentlemen in the silent generation. He went into World War II, enlisted in the Navy on his 17th birthday. And my dad taught me to just treasure every day, not because he ever said that to me. It's just the way he lived. I mean, he was a man who could be doing a chore. I tell people all the time, you've never seen anybody whistle and be so cheery and happy having to clean the pool or mow the lawn. Or he just enjoyed every single aspect of life. And he knew how to work really hard, and he knew when it was time to play and laugh. And he just, you know, his spirit is the spirit that I hope is in me, because every day is a gift. I've always felt that way, even when I was a little girl. So, I don't know, it's just who I am.
Yeah. Did you grow up in Minnesota, or were you born there?
I did. Yep, I did.
What part?
Yep, in a little town called Scandia. Do you know where that is?
I actually don't know where that is.
Do you know where Stillwater is?
Yep, I know where Stillwater
is. Yep, it's just upstream from Stillwater, about, I don't know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
I love Minnesota.
It's along the St. Croix. Oh, it's a beautiful little community. It was a teeny tiny town. I mean, it had, you know, a stop sign and, oh, two stop signs when I grew up there. It's a bigger town now. It's a city now, actually. And just a lovely place. So
what are your favorite things to do in Minnesota? Because I know I absolutely love all of the lakes, and like I grew up, I swear, on Lake Vermilion. You know where Lake Vermilion is?
Oh, fabulous! Way up north, up north.
I love it up there. Yeah.
Well, you know, northern Minnesota is very special. It's beautiful, and if you do love the lakes and the woods, it's amazing. But interestingly enough, I was down in Lake City just today, just a few hours ago, for the Lake City Parade that I rode in, and what a pretty area it is down there. Just gorgeous, just south of Red Wing.
Yep. Minnesota, there's just not a bad, it's just a really pretty place. And the people are always nice, and minus mosquitoes. That's the only thing I got to say. Minus mosquitoes and like that 80 below stuff that happens with the wind and the not freezing weather. That's freezing. That's just
right.
You can't breathe in without covering your mouth. You know, I just saw.
Well, when you were up at Lake Vermilion, you were feeling the mosquitoes because they do say it's the state bird, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Really the loon, but you had loons up there, too, which is probably one of my favorite things about Minnesota is I love loon calls to wake me up. But I live in downtown Minneapolis. I live right on the Mississippi River on the St. Anthony Falls, and a kind of a wonderful landmark for us is the Stone Arch Bridge, which I look right at from my living room window. And fortunately, I don't have a lot of mosquitoes here because, I don't know, they just don't like downtowns or something, or I'm up high enough, I don't know which, but I love that because I just leave the French doors open to the patio and I just let the air come in the summer. I love that because I can hear the waterfall, so that's quite cool.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So I love the state. I love being outside. I do love the lakes, and it's a great place to live.
Yeah. Do you still... I just wanted to give you an eye on time, too. We've got about 9 minutes left. Do you still own the business that you owned before?
I do. I do, and I have to tell you, Simplex, I started in college between my junior and senior year. And, again, it's a construction products company. It is going to be celebrating its 25th anniversary on the same night as the pageant finals on July 21st.
Oh.
Which I cannot believe I'm old enough to own a company that's 25 years old. So, yes, I do still own it and operate it and absolutely love what I do. But I have a great staff who has been unbelievably supportive of the time that I've been devoting to the pageant prep and just being Mrs. Minnesota and all of that. So it's been amazing.
Yeah. Now, most people wouldn't think of construction and the type of job you have and beauty queens and all that stuff. Do you get a fair amount of flack for some of it, or does anybody tease you?
Outside of my office and very close customers, I don't even speak of the pageant world, and I have no idea how many of them do or don't even know that it's a part of my life at all. So.
Yeah.
When I'm at work, I'm doing what I need to be doing. So
got it. Yeah. If you're crowned Mrs. International, what do you plan to do with your year?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me that because I'm so excited about the possibilities.
Yeah, I can see you. It seems like it's just kind of your thing. I don't know.
I
can visualize it actually. Sometimes you can't visualize.
So
you know what I mean? Sometimes you can't visualize things.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you can visualize it, it's probably really going to happen, or you're going to come real darn close. You know, you just don't.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see it though.
Oh, you're so sweet.
What do you think you're going to be doing?
Well, you know, I have this amazing network of friends. A lot of them from Harvard. My classmates were from other parts of the world, and we became unbelievably, we just had one of those classes that rocks, you know, when you graduate with this group of people and you've just connected in a way that a lot of other classes never had the opportunity. And so we have a reunion in a different part of the world every 2 years. And so, you know, our first one overseas was in Italy, and it just so happens one of my classmates, who was Rita Jeanrette, is now Princess Rita Boncompagna Ludovisi, and she married a prince named Niccolo, who's phenomenal, and they have a castle in Rome, in the heart of Rome. And
I want to go.
Well, I've been, and I want to go again.
That's awesome.
Because they're just an amazing couple, lovely, lovely people. And so I have this network, and they're all so excited for me. They're all cheering, and they're dying to be able to host me in their countries. And so the combination, and the Phoenix Society is also the largest organization of its kind in the world, and we have a far-reaching membership throughout the country. Even though we were based in the United States, it's based in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they focus on domestic membership. When we hold our World Burn Congress every year, we get burn survivors from around the globe. So the combination of the family, I'll say, that I have in the burn world and the family within my Harvard classmates, I just think could open some amazing doors to be able to have these kind of conversations with people all over the world. So yeah. I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, really take that title and really, really push it internationally.
Right.
For real. I really could see that because but women need it.
Women are coming from all over the world. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can just see you doing that. I think that's amazing. do they still do 4 minutes left, just so you know, so if I ask something profound will cut me off here, but do they still do the Go Red stuff with Mrs. International also?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, and not only do they just still do it, but I went to a Go Red event just this past Wednesday night, and I met Kevin, and I want to say his name is Hartman, maybe. He's the executive vice president out of Kansas City, and I think Kevin, along with a former Mrs. Minnesota Becky Ringen, or Miss Minnesota Becky Ringen, actually spearheaded getting together with Mary Richardson and her husband and creating that partnership. And Kevin's going to be in Chicago to celebrate their fifth year together in promoting Go Red for Women and heart disease prevention and stroke prevention and awareness. And I'm just thrilled to be a part of the whole thing. And I've learned so much volunteering for Go Red for Women. And my father died of a heart attack. My mother's had a stroke. So trust me, I'm all over it.
That's what I did last year. I mean, I didn't really go for the title of Mrs. International. I went to try and raise as much money as I could for Go Red, and that's the part that I ended up winning.
Yeah.
I was the Go Red winner.
Kudos.
And I think I raised, I don't know how much money, I think I probably raised, I raised thousands of dollars, though. I mean, it was thousands of dollars that got donated. So that was cool. So I'm glad to hear that they're doing that again this year, because I hadn't checked on that. So I could see that going internationally with you as well. What a neat conversation. So you're so strong. Yeah. Is there anything that in the last 2 minutes here? Is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have? Like, is there anything I glaringly missed? I think we covered a lot, but is there anything you want to add?
Well, we did cover a lot, but I actually have been dying to ask you how you ended up in Maine. When you're a Minnesota girl.
Ask me.
And so I need to know that before you hang up.
Okay. How I ended up in Maine. That's really funny. I actually grew up in Iowa, went back to Minnesota. I was born in Minnesota, went back to Minnesota. But from Minnesota, I actually moved to California. I got a divorce. Ooh. I got remarried and moved to California. And then we moved all the way from California in 2004 to Maine for a job, my husband's job. My husband is a federal securities attorney, and we moved. We bumped all the way across country with four boys and three cats on the airplane.
well, what do you think of it?
Maine is exactly like living in northern Minnesota, only with an ocean. It's a little bit more mountainous, but ocean. But the trees all look exactly like northern Minnesota. So there's no flat to it. It's actually just absolutely gorgeous. And the ocean sort of controls that weather, so we don't have the minus 80 stuff going on that minute.
Right.
We get Anyway.
Yeah,
I love Minnesota though. My whole family lives there. I mean, I'm in the middle of a kabillion brothers and sisters, and my parents live there, and
got it.
All right, so for anybody listening, we've got about a minute and a half left of the show, and if by any chance we keep talking, which is important to do, the show will cut off live to you, but it will continue to record, so you can listen on replay to the end of the show if we go. We'll try and wind up here, but I have a feeling we've got a few more things to chat about before we go, because I know I got to mention your websites and all that stuff again. So for anybody listening live, 60-second mark, we're going to cut off, but listen to us on replay. So I am going to wind up, though. I just want to thank you, Sarah Basie. I said it right.
Yes.
Minnesota.
Very nicely done.
Yeah, for being with us, and I want to just rattle off your website again. It's SARAHBAZEY mrsinternational.com, and you can read about Sarah's story there. And you can go to mrsinternational.com, and you can even vote for you. Is the voting closed yet?
Oh, I think you can vote for you. Can't you?
That's awesome. It's like a dollar a vote, isn't it? You can, yeah, a dollar a vote, and that money gets donated right to Go Red. So you can vote for Sarah to be the Go Red winner if you want to. It doesn't have any bearing on she wins Miss International or not, but, you know, still pretty cool. But I just want to wish you well. I'm so thankful that you're here with us in a number of ways. I'm glad that you survived that accident because I think you have so many gifts to share with the world, and you are.
Oh, thank you. You are so kind.
I just, it's interesting what we can do in the world, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. And it's all about people. It's all about touching each other's lives, you know? We're all just trying to get through life one day at a time, and hopefully we have as much joy and happiness and good health as possible.
Yeah, I love it. All right, we're closing on that.
Yeah.
So please, everyone, pass this show along to anyone who you think it might have a positive impact, and please vote for Sarah on mrsinternational.com for the Go Red winner. But more important, support her. She's just got such a story, and it's just a wonderful example of really turning pain into purpose, I think, is what I wanted to say. You just really have turned an experience into something that's just to learn from, and your positive energy and your smile and your shine and that little twinkle in your eye, glimmer in your eye shines through. So thank you for being with us. And
thank you.
Again, sarahbasey.com. And please visit us at besteveryou.com. And over the next month, you're going to see Sarah's picture appear there as long as a feature interview, kind of supporting her and her efforts on to Mrs. International. So thank you. And take care, Sarah. Good luck with everything. And if I were you, boy, I would sure bring something for your feet. Because your feet are going to hurt. Good luck with that.
I love it. Well, this was most fun.
You got a good high threshold for pain. But do something about your feet. It's just the most incredible. I just can't even quite explain them. Mrs. Texas and I were like elbowing each other, wondering whose feet hurt worse, and we were passing band-aids back and forth. And
well, that is really good to know, because I was just thinking about starting to put shoes out, so I'm going to make sure I pack some good ones.
Bring slippers and bring some band-aids and the things you slip into the bottom of your shoes, the gel sole and all that.
Yeah.
You know. Oh,
lots of those, huh?
Yeah, something. Cause,
that's good advice.
Yeah, because there's a lot of walking.
Yeah.
Walking. So.
Well, and of course, we have to do it in high heels, right?
Of course.
You couldn't possibly wear
some hair extensions and the whole bit.
And
dancing on stage and heels and everything. All right. I knew we'd end with a girl. All right. Thank you so much. Good luck with everything. Mrs. Minnesota, everyone, Sarah Basey. And she's on to Mrs. International in the middle of July. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Take care, and thank you so much, Sarah.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.